Welcome to episode 39 of the Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Iron Agenda, the podcast with fizz that tickles your nose. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
I'm Kevin.
And welcome back, Kevin.
Hi.
When are we going to welcome back Cotter?
Well, first you have to have Cotter on for the first time. Okay. And isn't he dead?
I have no idea.
Mr. Cotter.
They could reboot it. We could get Quentin Tarantino to reboot it again like on that Saturday Night Live.
There you go.
Yes.
I want to see, Inglourious Basterds when it comes out? I think it's coming out pretty soon. It's the new World War II Quentin Tarantino movie with Brad Pitt. Not a Brad Pitt fan.
Right, right.
But in the Inglourious Basterds, I believe that's
the title. That seems familiar.
It's a rewrite. I mean, it's totally fictional and everything, but I can't wait. It should be fun.
So what, the Nazis win?
No, I mean, it's
Valkyrie worked.
It's basically, I actually read an article earlier this week. It's like, it's a group of Jewish, assassins that go out and gorily kill a bunch of Nazis.
Wow.
Led by Brad Pitt's character, who is actually a Southerner, an American, but all the other ones are all Jewish.
So it's a Jewish, it's the redneck Nazi killing Jewish squad. Assassination squad?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow.
I can't wait to see it.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to think about this.
Just go see it and love it.
I'm not sure about what people are going to think if we're talking about this on the podcast.
Well.
I'll leave it up to Dave.
Okay.
I wish I could be at those design meetings where Quentin Tarantino discusses ideas for movies.
I think at this point, they just pretty much give him a blank check and say, okay, go for it.
I think he's got a series of spinning wheels and dartboards.
I was going to say a bingo turner thing, and he has Jews on one ball and World War II on another, and he just keeps turning
vampires.
And vampires until he gets enough balls out and they randomly form a sentence.
Have you guys ever seen the action movie generator online?
No.
It basically takes two random people or ethnic or political groups of people, and it says, it's like, he's a Rastafarian vampire. She's a New Age hippie. They fight crime.
That's awesome. I'd go see that movie.
But anyway, I guess we should probably actually talk about War Machine a little bit.
Yeah.
So,
Kevin, you made a trip recently.
Yeah, I spent last week Thursday through Sunday in Bellevue, Seattle, and it's part of the Privateer Invitational where the company basically invites out the entire press gang and a couple of pseudo celebrities throughout the community, like people who place at nationals or people who do really well at hardcore, and some podcasting groups, and we play games for the weekend, and Matt Wilson makes burgers, and it's pretty cool.
Does he wear a big floppy chef's hat?
No, he doesn't.
That's disappointing.
Which is weird because his title on the forums is PPS chef, but there was no hat, so
that is funny. Of course, chef being French.
We might actually have to get Matt Wilson a hat. Super.
Yes.
You should get him an Iron Agenda hat.
There we go. Made out of iron.
Yeah, there you go.
Wear this, sir.
Stainless steel or like the diamond cut metal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I flew out on Thursday. I stayed in a hotel with way too many people than I care to admit on the air. And I stayed with a big group, and it was with Jan, who's known as Devil Squid on the forums, and he kind of organized the entire outing as far as the group that we were with. It was him and a bunch of other people. A lot of them are East Coasters, so people that you guys might know, like Invader Larb, whose claim to fame are the famous widgets that he's been producing, which are the 2-inch by 1/2 inch by 5-inch by 3-inch.
Oh, they're like the dark glass things?
Yeah, the Oklahoma template.
Right, right.
So, he stayed with us, and, a lot of other people, Jen, who's known as Bubba Ferret, who, runs, one of the War Machine blogs out there. And
I still haven't found that thing.
It's called Ghetto Core Studios, I think.
With a K, right?
With a K, yeah. Core with a K. And, a lot of other people, and, it was a good time. So Thursday I got in really late, and, Mike Stubbs, who you guys know from the podcast, I believe he's called in a couple times, picked me up at the airport with Z and Hacksaw, and, this guy Nick, whose forum name escapes me for some reason.
So is this like the bad boys of War Machine?
No, not really.
Okay.
I don't know if there really is such a thing as the bad boys of War Machine, but if there is, it definitely wasn't us. We certainly were not a motley crew. As much as I would claim to be, or like to claim to be, but no. So he dropped us off at our hotel, and the next morning we all kind of woke up, and just kind of hung around Seattle and went to see the new Star Trek in IMAX.
Oh, cool.
Oh, and, but that was nice.
Zach Quinto's eyebrows are amazing. you can count his pores. It's something. So if you haven't seen the new Star Trek, see it in IMAX. And then after that, we hung around Pike's Place, which is this really kind of cool outdoor/indoor mall in Seattle. And then we went down to the headquarters. And pretty much as soon as we get in, Kevin and Skeleton Key Ed are standing at the doors, you know, waving these papers in our face that we have to sign that say we will not disclose the super secret things that we see.
So what did you see?
We're cleared for super secret, isn't it?
Ooh, yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Here, let me just turn off the recording.
Click.
Okay. So we basically kind of hang out for a while, and Dan comes out and he takes us back to the warehouse. Who's Biggie? And they have the warehouse kind of taped off. They have like this kind of thick plastic clear hanging down, like these tarps, which are supposed to block our view of the rest of the warehouse, but they really don't. Not that there was anything that we really saw, but I just thought it was kind of humorous that they decided to shield the rest of the warehouse with clear plastic. And they have a lot of tables set up back there. They had the Castle of the Key set up.
Oh, that's cool.
So from Evolution.
But that was impressive.
That was actually really cool. And they had a couple other tables set up, and one section of the warehouse was they had it kind of set up for Mon Pot Games. And so Friday night was pretty much just kind of meet and greet and play a couple pickup games, and I got in a game against Ross, who's known as Captain Kang. Captain Kane, he's from SoCal. He's a really cool guy. And, some people got to play in Castle of the Keys, and I honestly didn't really feel like it because I don't feel like moving Speed 4 dwarves up those stairs. So that was pretty much Friday night. We kind of hung around for a while, and Jason Souls was there, and he played a couple pickup games, and Matt, I don't believe, was there that first night. Who else was there? Ron Cruzzi was there, who's the studio director, and I talked to him for a bit, and he's a really cool guy, and kind of talked about his background in miniatures painting and how he got into it, and his experiences with kind of getting into the scene through Mike and Allie McVeigh's studio when they were out in Seattle, and how that kind of propelled him into Privateer Press when they joined the team. And that was pretty much it for the first night. It wasn't terribly exciting. We just kind of hung around and talked and met a lot of new people. The second day was Saturday. You know, we went back in and they said, don't show up before 10. So we show up at about 10 o'clock. And what they do is they split everybody into factions. And we do this kind of huge game that involves, it was like 12 or 13 tables. And what you want to do is each faction wants to control a separate table. And for every table you control, you get a point every time you gain control of it. And then they do this like accounting of who controls what tables during like every half an hour or so. And you score points for each one that you're controlling at that point. And then you can exit boards and enter onto boards. And, you know, it was really interesting because the team that ended up winning was the Menoth team, who is led by Gabriel Alonso, known as Galonzo on the forums. He runs the Guru Dojo, the Guru Dojo, actually. And he pretty much organized the entire Menoth team, and they had these crazy alliances going, and every time someone would show up on a Menite table, he'd say, no, you don't want to fight here. Go over here. We'll let you through our table to go fight over here. So he kind of masterfully played the politician's role. I don't know if he actually played a single game at all during the entire time, but he certainly won it for his team despite it.
Nice.
It was actually really cool, and there were times during the event where like you would be fighting against another person from another faction, and then somebody else would come onto your board, and whenever somebody else comes onto a board, they're always set up in such a place as to ambush one of the players and just completely decimate them. So if you kind of went in with like a real serious competitive feeling to it, you know, some of those people who did kind of walked away with a bad taste in their mouth because it just kind of stunk just to have someone, you know, deploy right next to you, and all of a sudden your whole army's just destroyed.
What happens if your army did get killed?
If you get killed, you can actually buy your army back with points that you've earned, which actually gets subtracted from your total. So even if you do get completely destroyed, you still can come back. And I don't think anybody ended up sitting out because they were lacking points at any time. So.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's just a big casual play a bunch of people with no strict rules. And
yeah. So, it was actually really fun. I had a great time.
As the dwarf player, were you forced to be on a team by yourself?
No, actually what happened with mercenary players is we were all kind of, they took all seven mercenary players. They put us in a room and they said, okay, divide up all the characters. And then we'll take all the mercenary players and we'll put them on their own. We'll put them onto faction teams based on what factions are lacking in number. So Scorn, for example, had like only four or five players. So they got two mercenary players. Protectorate, meanwhile, had eight, so they didn't have any mercenary players on their team. I played with Circle, who only had, I think, five players. So I pretty much represented the Circle, and, you know, I worked with them, and I worked to reinforce them, and, you know, there was a lot of kind of communication. And there was one point where me and his name is Oni Wasabi, I think his real name is Chad, and we were both mercenaries playing for Circle, and we had been defending this table for a while, and our armies have been kind of whittled down. And then two fresh Krix players show up, and at which point we're like, oh god, we're screwed if this game's allowed to go on. So I kind of yell to the to one of the other Circle players, hey, we need some help with this table. And Jim from Felcall is actually, who was playing Circle, you know, ambushed onto this table and completely just destroyed one of those Krix players who didn't even have a chance really to respond. You know, like I said, if you took it really seriously and if you're you know, you didn't go in expecting to take major losses, it was really possible to walk away with kind of a bad taste in your mouth. But if you approached it, you know, casually and you were there to have a good time and just chat and relax, then, you know, you had a good time. I know that I certainly did, so. Then after that went on actually for a while. We showed up at 10, the game started about noon, and we went till about 8 o'clock.
Wow.
So that was a long, long event. And then after that, you know, we were pretty much just kind of kicked out of the building until Sunday morning, and we went out to one of the local game stores in the area, which I believe was in Redmond. That sounds right. So we went out to Redmond, where they have a game store out there. It was like, I think it was called Genesis Games or something like that. They called it 3G. I can't remember what that acronym actually stands for. And there was a nice Irish pub next to it, so we went in and drank some beer and ate some food and, you know, talked to some people. And I, you know, got to spend some time with some people I don't get to see terribly often. So it was pretty cool. And then after that, we went over to 3G and we played some people were playing some pickup games, but most of us were so worn out by War Machine that we kind of devolved into playing silly card games like Bang or
Infernal Contraption.
Like someone was playing Munchkin. I don't think Infernal Contraption was actually played.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I've played it before and I like it, but I don't own it, and I own a couple of those little card games. And whenever I'm like, you know, I don't really feel like playing War Machine, I think I'm just going to play Munchkin.
It's been a while since we put it up here, but I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a good game. But, you know, it just seems like another kind of distraction type of game, which I already own many of.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of competition for it, especially, like you said, Munchkin, which is huge, and Flux.
Yeah, or, you know, killer Bunnies or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing these, and they were in the store. They had a couple glass cases, and one of the employees at the store is an amazingly ridiculous painter. And he had these Scorn Immortals that were painted in marble, and it was like a red and blue marble, and as soon as I saw them, I was like, oh my god, this is, like, I was calling people over the case to actually look at them.
Do you think by any chance it could have been the studio models? Because the studio models, at least on the web, I think are that blue and red marble-ish kind of thing.
I don't think so. They might have been. I remember seeing them and thinking, why have I not seen these in No Quarter? But, so if you're ever in that store, look for those Immortals, because they are ridiculous. And then we went and we talked to that guy who was running the store, and he's like, yeah, you know, they're okay. And I, you know, proceeded to commit harakiri right there, realizing that I would never paint anything that well.
Well, if they're all okay, you could have probably bought them for cheap.
Yeah, there you go.
You're right, they're crap.
So yeah, Saturday was really cool. Skeleton Key Ed ran it. He was one of the people running it, and Kevin was running it. And, gosh, who else? Matt Wilson actually was there for just a little while. He played for the Signar team for like an hour, and then he had to go to a wedding. Jason Souls wasn't there at all on Saturday, which is kind of a downer. Doug Seacat actually was sick all weekend and couldn't be there, and which is really unfortunate because I really wanted to meet him. Ron Cruzy, I think, showed up for a while on Saturday and Sunday. So there wasn't a ton of staff there. There was, you know, a good deal of people, but so that was Saturday. And then Sunday was pretty much all pickup games, and, you know, they were all barbecuing outside. Kevin and Matt and Ogre were all outside and cooking up some dogs and some burgers, and, you know, people pretty much just played pickup games until it was time to go, and I left for the airport, I think, at about 3 o'clock, and that was pretty much the trip. So it was a really, really cool event, and I think for anyone who's in the press gang or people who are aspiring to be in the press gang or you know, people who are looking for a reason to do it, it was really kind of cool. And granted, I haven't been out to a ton of cons, so I haven't really had that great con experience like you see at Gen Con or Temple Con. You know, I did get to meet a lot of great people, and I had a great time, and the staff were great, and everyone was really nice and friendly. And I talked to the DC was there, and I talked to him for a while, and I asked him some rather silly questions that I was pretty sure he wouldn't be able to answer anyway. But you know, he was very humoring and very nice, and I feel so bad for him because the work that he has to do right now with the field test stuff has just got to be so rough.
Was he talking bad about us guys back in St. Louis?
Oh no, he was. I don't think he talked bad about anybody.
Oh, he probably wouldn't. He was only here for, I think, 5-6 years or something like that, Dave?
Yeah.
He was a really nice guy. I can't imagine him speaking ill of anybody.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was he was a big part of building up the St. Louis War Machine community into what it is.
Yeah, he was one of the originals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the staff was great, and, you know, the people were all really cool, and I got to meet a lot of press gangers that I had only really known in the forums, and The whole introduction process is really interesting because someone would say, "Hi, I'm, you know, so-and-so," and they would say their forename. Or they would say their first name, and I go, "Oh, okay." And they would say, "I'm known as Hacksaw." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, okay, hey, Hacksaw." So.
And you probably, nobody probably called
him. Did he walk around with a 2x4 over his shoulder?
That's right.
He didn't.
An American
which
flag.
I was so hoping that he would. So, yeah, it was a really great weekend. So, you know, if people are out there and they're looking for a cool reason to join the press gang and get a really unique experience, I think this is really kind of cool. This is a really excellent event. So, and, you know, one of the only ways to get into that is if you're a member of the gang or you happen to place really well at Nationals or belong to another podcast.
I'm sure there are other ways
to
get
I won't mention.
We'll find a way.
Yeah.
Right. So that was pretty much it. I mean, did you guys have any questions about the event at all, or...
Well, how big was it? How many people actually showed up?
I think there was something like 80 people total for the entire event.
It's pretty good. So
it was pretty cool to see all those people, all those press gangers, really excited about the company and what they're doing. And you know, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, people talking to Biggie or Kevin or whoever about, hey, you know, what can we do to kind of help things and make things better for the company? Because we love this game and we only want to see it succeed. So everyone was really, you know, really excited, and, you know, it wasn't just about, hey, let's just get together and have a good time. It's, you know, let's talk about what it is that we do when we're not just here. You know, I talked to Hacksaw a bit about Temple Con and about the success that he's had there and how he's gone about getting that. And I talked to some people about events that they'd run, you know, how they go about doing that, and, you know, how I can go about as a press ganger making events more interesting for my local players. So that there was a lot of that. It wasn't just kind of get together and play some games and drink some beer. It was, you know, us kind of on our retreat discussing.
So like the G80 summit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except without the protesters.
Right. Right.
There were some Warhammer people out front with pickets.
Right.
Oh, those were Warhammer. I thought those were the little girls from the dance studio next door.
I think it's really interesting, and in a good way, that for the company who really pushes the, you know, competitive environment, which, you know, they have at some of their higher level conventions, their big party for, say, themselves and their representatives is a very casual, laid back game. You know, a weekend of gaming. And I think actually having more quote unquote official events like that, would be great as far as, you know, kind of building local communities.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you know, that's something that we talked a lot about on Saturday night. I think I mentioned off the podcast that the Podthralls are actually sort of local players. They're down in Colorado Springs. I'm up in Denver. And mm-hmm. we spent a lot of time talking about how we can grow our community and make our community more of a community and less kind of as a bunch of divided groups that happen to play the same game that maybe get together once a year to play in our big semi-annual event where everyone just kind of brings the nastiest list they can. But I mean, yeah, playing all those kind of those casual type events really kind of got me thinking differently about how I'd like to approach kind of building up my community and kind of creating bridges between different stores and different areas. Because I mean, like I say, that typically if I'm seeing someone from a different part of the area, it's in a big event, and I'm probably cranky because I've played three or four games and it's been against really kind of tough opponents running tough lists. So, you know, the whole idea of running more casual events and less straight tournaments was discussed a great deal, and it's something that I've actually been working on the last week, talking with the local press gang and talking with my local players about getting going.
I know Clutch down in Springfield, the guy who sets up War Machine Weekend every year, Springfield, Missouri, I should specify. I don't remember, Dave, if it's happened already, or maybe you guys know.
I think it was a couple.
Was it? We had this gigantic barbecue, and there may have been a tournament associated with it.
There was.
I wasn't sure if it was that or Open Gaming. But yeah, that was something that he was really trying to do. Just have a bunch of people together for a good time. Tournament, surely, but I think they had some other games going on, too.
I think that at this year's 2-4 for Gen Con here in St. Louis, that's an event that we run every year. People who didn't go to Gen Con, we call it 2-4 for Gen Con as a joke. If you're not at Gen Con, you can go to the tournament on that Saturday of Gen Con.
Right.
And I think they barbecued last year.
I don't know if they did last year, but I'm sure they'll do it this year if they didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially for smaller communities, you want to get more people involved, make it friendly. I can't think of a better thing to do to actually just build community loyalty. Is that the right word for it? Then
I wouldn't necessarily say loyalty as much as just kind of create bridges between these kind of small insulated groups.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think about, you know, trying to convince players to come down from Fort Collins or up from Colorado Springs for events that we run up in Denver. And, you know, some of the responses that I've heard is, you know, the last time I was up here for an event, you know, I played against so-and-so, and I, you know, they just weren't really that pleasant to play against, which, and, you know, in some cases, you know, names are mentioned, and I'm like, really? He's a really nice guy. I've never had that experience. And I think a big part of that is when the only time you're meeting someone is at a tournament and in a really big kind of competitive setting, people aren't their normal selves. And you don't really get, I think it's really difficult to get a good first impression of somebody at a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I'd agree for the most part, yeah. How geographically dispersed is your area? You talk about going up to Denver or down from Denver. How far of a drive, say, is that?
I live in, like, the north metro area of Denver, which is kind of between Boulder and Denver. My local area is kind of just that whole area. There's a store in Boulder that I support and a store in Broomfield, which is kind of southeast of Boulder.
Well, Colorado Springs, for example, how far away is that?
Colorado Springs is about an hour south of Denver.
Just so far enough where you don't want to drive every week to go to the store.
Right. So if I were to run an event in the North Metro area, it would take them about an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes just to get to the store. From my experience, if they're going to have to wake up early enough to get up here for an event or drive home late enough to be able to stay for the entire event, you know, I want them to have a good time.
Sure.
So if they're not having a good time, you know, I have to try and figure out why that is. And from what I'm understanding, part of that is when people are in that competitive mindset, they don't tend to be as friendly as they normally would be for whatever reason. And it's not that it's intentional or that people are sour. It's just, you know, when you have to play against, when you're playing in a really competitive event and you really want to do well, if, you know, your first game is against like a really tough Epic Vlad opponent and then a really tough, you know, Harbinger list, and then a really tough, you know, but by that third and fourth round, you're going to be in a bad mood regardless.
Yeah, that's true. And that's kind of one of the dangers of the big competitive environment. I know it also depends on the event itself. Like, we had a hardcore practice event here in St. Louis a few weeks ago where pretty much everybody sat down and was far more strict than they usually would, because that's mm-hmm. what you expect at a hardcore. And if someone had came up to that for their first event with the St. Louis community, yeah, it probably wouldn't have left the best taste in their mouth, but like it didn't bother any of us because we knew that this was, we're seeing the competitive side of everyone else.
Right. So, I mean, you're playing with people who you know already and you know their real personality. You know that they're not going to necessarily be in the best mood when they're in a competitive environment, but that they're still genuinely good people and in most cases, you know, they're great to hang out with. So, I mean, and you mentioned the barbecue, and that's something that kind of we talked about, is just not even running a tournament, but just say, hey, we're going to run casual games, we're going to barbecue, we're going to have some people bring out some, you know, some barbecue pits, and we're going to cook some dogs and some burgers, and, you know, you guys should just come up, we're going to have a good time, and if you guys need a place to crash, you know, I have a large finished basement with ample floor space. So, you know, and that's something that I'm personally working on as far as press gangers, trying to create, you know, those bridges that I had mentioned where people don't just see the competitive sides of the Springs players, the Denver players, the Fort Collins players. They're seeing them in a more social setting. And I think that it's, when you know a person a little bit better, it's a lot easier to play against them and be forgiving of some of that kind of competitive behavior.
Yeah, it's, we had an event up here where we had some folks from Columbia come up, and some guy I hadn't played before, he turned out to be a really, really nice guy, but both of us were kind of distant and not really mean or strict, but because you don't know how to address the other guy that you've never met him before. By the end of the game, it was because we both were able to, you know, just realize that, okay, neither of us really care. It helped that we were both in the loser's bracket by that time. Oh, yeah. But he was one of the, you know, nicest guys I've played against, and it was a really great time. But that was not an immediate thing. It took some work to actually get the game to that point.
It's a weird way to meet somebody. You're meeting them over a plate of strict rules, you know.
You're meeting them in competition. I think that's the big thing.
That's true. Yeah, well, yeah.
Like, I'm even hesitant to go to a convention to role play with people I haven't played before, and then that's a cooperative thing.
Yeah, well, that's also more of a, I'll say it's a more of a social thing, since you are interacting, like you're trying to build like a story opposed to, I guess it's sort of on the same level. I think it's different in my mind, but either way, anytime you're meeting somebody over something that isn't like something like a meal or something like that, you know, it's a strict set of rules, and you have to deal with not only interpersonal problems with the rules of a game in addition to that. I think that causes a little bit of anxiety, I suppose. Yeah.
And I think, one thing that helps us in St. Louis is the game store a lot of us go to is two doors down from a bar who has, for example, half price appetizers every day that we game. So there'll be a lot of times where half the store will get up and go get appetizers and sit down and eat for a little while, grab some beer. And at any point during the store, while during open play is going on, half the people will be playing. The other half will be socializing. Might not even necessarily, there might be open tables. They might just be talking. And I think that is one of the best things for a community, but you got to get there, especially when you start adding other communities in. And I mean, like you said, it's like, it would take a lot to get me to drive somewhere. And I know people are the same way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, if your only experience, you know, making that drive is you go to an event and you feel like you're not necessarily treated very nicely, why would you do it again?
Exactly. It's kind of hard, but you have to make your community make a good first impression every event. That's a lot of work.
And you know, it's, and admittedly I know that I haven't necessarily been the most gracious opponent in some games. The last Clash Colorado, I remember my third game, I was just tired because I was running the Seer Forge Commission, who many consider certainly to be very non-competitive, and I remember I was going into it, you know, with the thought that I was going to be blogging a good deal of it, so that I knew that what my performance was going to be made public, not just to those there, but also on the internet. And while I know my blog doesn't necessarily have the largest group of readers, I know that the people do read it. So, you know, I felt a lot of pressure. And you know, after my second game, I just had a headache. And I know the person I was playing against, I'm pretty sure I didn't treat him very well. And having that been the first time that I had met him, I'm sure I didn't give off a very good first impression.
I think anybody can understand not having a good day.
Yeah, everybody has the off days, but off games even. Yeah.
Like you said, that was that person's first impression of you. And it kind of stinks that you having a bad day lines up with that.
I mean, and it's a social game. War Machine Hordes, I think any of these games are kind of innately social. And that if they're not, if that's not acknowledged before the competitive aspect, then you're going to run into problems. I mean, I've gone to, I went to one Magic tournament once, and my first game I sat down and I broke my deck out, and the person I was playing against had headphones on the entire time.
Yeah, that's not exactly conducive to conversation. And I'm like, really?
Why don't you go home and play online?
Yeah.
You know?
Good point.
I think I've seen that before, too.
Really? Yeah, I've never seen that, but I'd tell them to take off their headphones.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was discussed kind of at great length, and it's something that's certainly been on my mind all week since I left. And so, yeah, you know, that was pretty much, that was all discussed kind of, I think, at great length, so.
Well, it's good that conversation's out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's definitely an important one for a lot of groups to have because, you know, a lot of people kind of, they don't necessarily realize that, you know, that the first impression that you, the first time you meet a lot of players is at tournaments, and you may not give off a really good first impression, and so be aware of that.
Yeah, a lot of people will take community for granted.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, oh, I've been gaming with these people all the time. They're just nice. Just that's how people are, right? Eh?
Not always.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's easy to think of the people you play with as being nice or normal players or whatever because that's what you're used to. And then maybe you see something that contrasts that and you realize, hey, I've been playing with this douchebag this whole time. I personally can't think of an example of that, but I can see how it could happen. Yep. Like Pat.
Yep.
Take off your headphones, Pat. Actually, need him in for this conversation.
Oh, okay. I.
What do you think, Pat?
I try not to think too much. No, I agree. I think you hit it right on the head in the fact that I would even go as far as to say that this is unlike other social games. Like, I think a better example of social would be, like you said, like role-playing and everything. I think just the mere fact that you're coming to a competition really does inhibit the social aspect of it, especially in tournament play.
Yeah.
Definitely, friendly games, pickup games can be more social, but I think even those will lend themselves to, you know, well, you're sitting there, you're thinking about your army and your strategy, trying to learn how to play or whatever else. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's not collaborative like an RPG.
Yeah.
Typically
yeah.
So,
you know, yeah. A lot of times, you know, if you'll, you know, my idea of social is where you're going to be talking across the table and, you know, either about what you're doing or in a cooperative setting, like you say, sort of like what role-playing you really would be. So this really isn't. But, you know, there's all kinds of examples like this. Even, you know, chess is like that, too. Anything where you're across the table from somebody, it's a little different.
All right. How about anything else to add here?
I don't think so.
I'm dry.
Do you?
Have a drink. I haven't been dry this whole episode.
Yeah, Pat has been boozing it up.
I'm living in a wet county, baby.
Pat's got himself a woodchuck.
He also has a beer.
Chucking wood. No, this is woodchuck.
It's like liquefied woodchuck?
I don't drink beer.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, it's cider.
It's actually, they take apple cider and woodchucks and turn it into a mixed drink.
It's the woodchuck that makes it good.
Yeah. That's right. I catch my own.
All right. Well, Kevin, we know you got to take off. You got a few plans this evening. But we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about Privateer Press Weekend and a little bit about gaming communities as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, thanks for having me on again. I don't know why, what you guys see in having me on, but I'm more than happy to do it, so.
Well, if you're going to have that attitude, we'll never have you on again.
No, we'll have him on every week.
Oh, brother.
We do appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, definitely. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend.
Yes.
Always a pleasure.
Take it easy.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
All right, so we've been talking about competitive events and casual events, and we haven't talked about lists that are fun to play against, casual events that are fun to play against much.
Luke actually brought his Dodge Charger list on. That was the closest we've had to a casual list on the show, I think.
That was way back in like episode 15 or something. We've more than doubled that.
That was back when no one in their right mind would play Chargers.
Until Mark II, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, we never said Luke was in his right mind.
That's true.
So I was thinking about fun lists that I remembered playing against. Games where I had a good time and trying to figure out what was it about that competitor or his or her list that I thought was fun.
And not that it's the list that makes the game competitive. Like, I played against Epic Morgul list. Like, that person from Columbia I talked about had a really casual, fun game. He was playing an Epic Morgul, I'm going to blind you and stab your face list.
Right.
It was still fun.
Right. Yeah, it's usually, I think, a combination. I would say it's more the player than the list itself.
Oh, absolutely.
But the list, I think, definitely has a chunk of the percentage there. And so I remember last Gen Con, I was playing .not dice.
Dot not dice.
Dot not dice. He went into URL dump.
Okay.
He's his own universal resource. Never mind. Not Dice is his name. Well, his forum name. And he was playing Ashlyn. And I remember during and after the game thinking, wow, that was a hell of a game. It was fun. And a lot of it was definitely due to him. But he's not here today. So I'm going to end up talking about a list similar to the one he ran. Not the exact one, but similar.
Okay.
So it was headed up by Ashlyn Dillies, the Laylee's Resistance person. You know.
Okay.
She in tow has a Nomad and a Vanguard in her battle group. The Vanguard because it's a Laylee's, and Nomad because it's a neat-looking jack, I think.
And that finally has reach.
And Mark II, yeah. She has Alt and Ashley there, in case she's going up against Hordes. Need that guy. Anastasia DeBray, because she's Laylee's. Plus, she can play some foolishness with your opponent's deployment. Gorman DeWolf, again, because he's Laylee's, but he's a pretty good utility piece. We have Gudrun the Wanderer, along with a Boker, who he's tied to. Little AD shenanigans. We have Rupert Carvolo, who's from Ord, not Lael, but hey, he's a merc. And he's also a good utility piece like Gorman. Alongside those guys, we have Stannis Brocker and 4 Steelhead Cavalry models. So 5 Cavalry models total.
Okay.
We have 10 Steelhead Halberdiers, which pair well with a Steelhead Cavalry. And coming up last, we have 9 Nis Hunters, including Selena Raphael, their leader.
So this is a Highborn contract?
It is. Actually, sort of got the idea, not only from that Not Dice game, but I think it was Clockwork Girl on her forums was talking about a Laylee's Resistance theme from that episode where Tim was on last. And I thought that might be a fun way to start off the list. You know, start with that Laylee's Resistance. It doesn't have gun mages, so you can't say anything in here as the Amethyst Rose dudes or anything like that. But that's sort of the fluff in my mind behind the list. It's actually leading the way against their Kador invaders.
Okay. Well, I guess my first question is, what are you going to advance deploy with your free bonus?
In Mark 1, certainly we get 1. In Mark 2, we get all solos deployed.
This is true.
Interesting. But this is a Mark 1 discussion here for now. See, already AD, I guess I should say, we have what, Alton?
Alton Ashley.
Gudrun and his Boker. Mm-hmm. And Anastasia can be
We'll call AD'd. It virtually AD.
Well, she automatically gets a deep deployment.
Right.
I could deploy her advance. I probably wouldn't because I have deep deployment with her. I would go ahead and put, I guess, Stannis Brocker might be the only real other choice. What do you think?
I mean, either him or Rupert.
Yeah, and I certainly won't want Rupert up that far.
It might almost depend. I mean, if you want him upfield, you know, if whatever he's going to pipe on eventually runs first turn anyway, true. And he's not going to need to give them anything.
That's true.
It could be okay just to get him positioned.
And you
have to fully AD him.
Right. I was about to say, you certainly doesn't need to be the full distance. Well, just for an answer, I'll say Stannis Brocker.
Okay.
So he can maybe get in one punch on maybe another a model that's AD'd out there. So yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay. So what's this list's job? What's its tactic?
Well, I'll compare it against the Not Dice list that I played way back. He had at least 1 mule, I think just 1 mule. And of course that tied with her feet and a boost with a focus and with Dougal McNeil, you can do all sorts of almost not guaranteed, but much better chance of critical devastation with a throw, which you can use to set up for a win. This doesn't have that in there, so you can't throw anything like a caster to go for a win. So I think in this case you would want to take something up front. In my mind, I'm thinking the cavalry with Stannis Brocker to try to act as a big speed bump, or a speed bump at least, try to get them up front, hold up the rest of the enemy's army while everything else advances. And then at some point, Ashlyn would try to use her feet to try to actually go in for the kill. And if not, then at least she has the feet to sort of prevent her death the next turn. Now, that killing blow could come from a couple of things. The Boker tied to Gudrun, that's actually a pretty survivable little mini unit, I think. And Gudrun obviously is hard to kill. And if you can protect his Boker, then the Boker himself might be able to go in for a suicide run there.
Mm.
Other than that, you don't have a lot of strong assassination-type models in the list, other than maybe Ashlyn herself, possibly. Selena Raphael and the Nis Hunters, if they can maybe get a good flank on her, they could take out quite of a chunk of the enemy's army and open up a hole for that punch to go through. But it's not necessarily the most assassinated oriented list. I think it could hold up to attrition kind of well because you got some tough in there with Rupert and Gudrun and the Boker being fairly survivable. So I think you got to play smart with it. It's fragile on a lot of fronts, but I think it can do some damage where you need it. The Nomad, for example, it's slow, but it can pack quite a wallop if you can get it up to where it needs to go.
What about doing something like instead of leading with a Cav, leading with a Nis with Quicken on them? I mean, bringing them up to defense, what, 17 against ranged?
Yeah, they would be 17 defense. They would die to blast damage like they normally do, but certainly if they had something up there that was, if you had a shooty army on the other side, they would definitely help them survive, especially if you could throw them into some woods for some concealment or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that they also might be able to get a jump on things because they are so fast to begin with. Quick and just makes them that much faster. You might be able to get there and do the alpha strike, which you might need to survive later turns.
Yeah, they're really fast weapon masters. They're not, I mean, you think, oh, elf bows, you know, they're shooty because they have concentrated valley, but
they have those claymores.
Yeah, they're not bad in melee either. Mm-hmm. So just going to try and carve through your opponent, basically.
I think so. Her feet, like you were saying before recording, you were asking me if her feat is fun to play against. And I think the feat itself can be a bear to deal with. But given the rest of the list, I think she needs it to sort of hold on. I mean, the feat helps her and screws the opponent. That's really the nastiest part of the list, I think. And she would use that, I think, to just survive on the way up.
You think it might almost be, she feats and uses her army and tries to kill the opponent to the point where she can get in and seal the deal?
I think so. I mean, I mentioned that she might be able to be one of the key pieces that to go in for the blow. She needs support to do that, though. I mean, she's great with her blade. She doesn't have a high pow weapon, but she's easy. She's not easy to hit, but if she is hit, she has such a low armor that she may not be able to sustain it. So if she does go in, you better be sure that she's about to win.
What is her defense armor and health?
17 defense, armor 14, and she has 14 boxes.
I mean, she's kind of like, she's a lot like Kane.
The big difference, though, is the fact, though, that Kane does it at range. She doesn't...
Right.
Yeah.
And he can't flash away. Well, yeah, that's his modus operandi.
I mean, she has Feint, which is a nice little spell.
True, but that disappears once it's used. And so if you have a secondary model to go in, she's still sitting there. I think I may have misspoken on Kane's defense there. I'm not sure, but...
No, his armor's 13.
Oh, is he 13? Okay. In that case, she's one up on him, but still 14 with 14 boxes. That's not healthy.
No,
that's
not at all. Good.
So from your guys' perspective, mm-hmm. I've tried to describe here how I might use it to win. So I know how I would play it. What do you guys think about playing against it? Not necessarily how you would beat it, but what's your ideas on whether it's fun to play against, whether it's toilsome to do so? I don't know. What are you thinking?
Well, I think the one thing that it has going for it right off the bat, and this isn't just a criticism one way or the other, is, it's not an ace list.
Right.
You're not going to look at it and see, oh, God, I've got to face this on the table. And for many people, it's going to be, oh, wait, this is something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that from that perspective alone, that makes it more fun to play against than something like a Krios list,
right,
or a Saren list.
I think I played against Ashlyn maybe once or twice. I've seen a Nomad on the table once, independent of Warcaster. I've seen one once. I've never seen a Vanguard on the table.
Yeah, I've never actually played against Ashlyn. So, I mean, I've read about her and looked at her and everything like that, but I've never seen her in play. So, and just in looking at this feat, yeah, that it would definitely be interesting to play against. And I'm with you, Dave. I kind of like, I like these lists that are more middle of the road, maybe you call it. Like you say, it's not the epic lad list where, oh my God, I know what I'm going to expect. I know how I'm going to be bent over the table. And that's what I have to try to avoid. This one, it's like, well, there's three or four different ways he can come at me or whatever, and I have to try to figure that out. It is more fun to play against. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of more fun to play because I think it will hone your tactics a little bit better because, yeah, you've got to try to figure out what will work, what won't. So, yeah.
I mean, I think there are quite a few punches. Nyss are great on their own. The Steelhead block together works very well. I almost wonder, and maybe this is just me, but I wonder if you happen to take it against a competitive player, if you're going to put yourself in the position to get looked down on. Just like someone can form a negative opinion of, oh God, look at what he's playing. What if someone could form an opinion of, oh God, this guy doesn't know what he's doing? Like you said, you've never seen a Nomad.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other, we'll say, some better options for the Merc players. There's no Mule, like you said, to capitalize on her feet. Now, granted, the other stuff she has on her list, there's some solid stuff there, but if it's not a tweaked list, especially being not a popular caster, do you think that could have its own connotation?
I think it could, but were I the Ashlyn player in this case, I think that would be an opinion that I just wouldn't care about.
Probably. I agree with you. I agree.
I mean, because
if that guy's going to look down on you for it, he's not the guy who's going to try and get as friendly with the game anyway.
I can't see anybody coming from that mindset, but the sad thing is I bet you there are people out there who would. I mean, because we're playing a game here, even if it's competitive, I'm playing what I want to play. Why would you look down on somebody for that? I just don't get that.
I can't remember where I heard this, but I swear I heard somebody say that when they played another guy who told them they lost during deployment. And that's the kind of guy it seems like would form this opinion that I'm trying to suggest.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's not the kind of guy you're going to have a very personal game with anyway.
Right.
But I was just curious what your thoughts on about the possibility. I mean, it's a remote possibility and it's not likely.
Right. Well, apparently, like you said, somebody had that experience and got to be some kind of a tool to say something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've actually heard that from Dave on occasion, but I mean, it's Dave.
Well, no, when you I tell you, you lost because you agreed to a game against me.
Right.
Yes, I'm an asshole. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh. To hear something like that from an opponent, that totally goes against anything that this game wants to promote, what we want from this in any kind of community. I would go so far as to say that I think I would encourage any community to run a player like that out of town with pitchforks and burning torches.
Burning torches?
Burning torches.
Fire and all, huh?
Yeah.
So you are a Mennite.
Okay, electric torches.
Arc welders.
Arc welders.
I think those are called flashlights.
Ooh.
Of course, in the UK, they would actually call it a torch.
Yeah, that's
interestingly
true.
Enough.
Anyway. I think that it's kind of the... I mean, we're going to go off on a tangent here.
Mm-hmm.
The misconception of page 5, people taking it literal versus tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And like Pat said, that's not really what the game wants to promote, but that is what some people see.
Yeah.
Well, I think a game, it gets old whenever it gets to the point where everybody is just, all they have is tweak lists. They've got the best of the best of the best models for their faction put together. It's it's a list that can't be beat. And that's fine. That's competition. That's what everybody's going to do. I will do it myself. But I think what the problem is that when a game as a whole gets to that point, it's bad. It's bad news. You know, you need to try to avoid that. You need to keep it fresh and let's avoid just putting out the Uber models and, making it just escalation of, who's got the best nuke. My opinion.
Sometimes you bring that conventional warhead just for fun. But, it'd be kind of weird because to play against something like this, you don't have an overwhelming threat.
Right.
But you have a lot of pieces that could wreck damage if unchecked.
Yes.
So the competitive aspect of this is like going against this list is, okay, well, if you knock Ashlyn down, game's over. So any sort of pop and drop from Striker, Krios, Magnus, anybody like that can put a lot of hurt on her.
Well, the Vanguard gives her extra defense. If he's gotten that in front of her, he's a good slam target.
This is true. Or anybody getting thrown, because that Nomad's going to be upfield, and that's a low defense.
True.
There's that aspect of it. But otherwise, you're going to have to use some sort of combined or AoEs for this.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. You're going to have to. You have to find some way to do it. And if they have Quicken on them, that's hard to do CRAs. The ideal situation in that case is Concentrated Volley.
Yeah.
Because you can catch multiple of them with the combined bonus, and their low armor means the low damage doesn't matter. So like other Nyss Hunters or like the Archers in the Legion.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Halberdier and the Cav, the problem is, the Halberdiers have Forfend. So as you move to engage them, they're going to attack you back.
Right.
Which basically means you can't kill them as quick. If you don't kill them quick and if you leave some around and if the Cav hit you next turn, they're going to get that flank bonus, which is very nasty.
Yes, it is.
So you really need to either keep the Cav away from the Halberdiers so that they can't basically, build their synergy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need to keep the kill all the Halberdiers at once.
Right. Or enough where they can't meet up with the Cav.
Right, yeah, exactly. Or limit what they're, nearby.
Possibly try to scare them away if you've got something that can do that.
Well, Stannis is a commander, so he's got that going for him. But yeah, anything like that. But, Rupert can make things fearless.
True.
I don't know if he'll be up that far.
Right.
But, I think it's going to be interesting. Like, something like, just trying to think of a kind of funnish thing off the top of my head would be something like a Exemplar theme. Errance could tie up the Steelhead. Problem is, then in that case, it was going to be the, what are they called? The Nyss Hunters.
Right.
I don't have any great way to deal with them. I pretty much have to have you charge something and a counter charge or use Zealots.
Yeah.
Krios is kind of the man of the people, so Zealots kind of fit with him.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean if I was playing on an Exemplar list, I'd necessarily have some.
Right.
I mean, even if I take something like Bastions, they've got decent armor, they got reach, good mats, so they could actually kill a couple. Those Weapon Master charges coming back at me from the Nis would tear them up.
Let's say, what's the armor on a Bastion?
17.
I think the Nis Claymores are 9.
Oh, are they?
So you're looking at a couple points per hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mark 1, they only have 5 on the non-leaders.
Okay. Yeah.
And as you damage them, you're powering them up, but you don't care because sure. Your armor's so low.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I think that the Boker is going to be an interesting little thing to deal with. It stinks. You've got to spend resources to kill Gudrun twice.
Yeah.
You have to, which means you've got to kill him the first time, then deal with the Boker, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
and maybe deal with him again.
And depending on what you're using to kill him the first time, you might have to expect to lose it when he stands up.
Yep. I like Idrian's.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they can intercept and just be nasty and annoying.
If you were to get first turn with the Idrians, that could just completely screw up my front lines.
Yeah, that would not be fun, though. I mean, you're talking about playing a list for that's fun.
Yeah.
That's a mean and competitive thing to do, not that it's out of place. Mm-hmm. In any sort of competitive environment, yeah, I'd do it. Yeah. You do have, though, Anastasia to limit their deployment.
That is true. That's true.
So you've got a little bit there. But yeah, I think that's it from the War Machine's perspective. I think that the Horde perspective has a little bit tougher time because Alton's going to be pecking away at beasts.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be a problem. Legion in particular, between flank from the Steelhead, decent mat on this, and even your feet, my strength, my high defense, doesn't matter. Just basically, your army gets around my strength
mm-hmm.
for an entire turn, which could, I mean, Steelheads, especially Cav, Hunters, they could wreck an Angelius easily.
It occurs to me, I played Ashland against your Legion once. You had one of the Liliths.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember this.
Yeah. I couldn't get to you one turn. I had pirates swinging around one side.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple walls and you were going back. You ended up beating me. I got really close on my kill turn. Didn't pull it out. And you had an Angelius there. Angelius may have been what killed Ashland. I can't remember. Could have been a Seraph. But yeah, it just occurred to me we actually went through those motions once.
Yeah, you get someone like Ashland versus Lilith out there. It's the battle of who can't be hit,
mm-hmm.
but whose army can definitely hit for one turn.
Right.
So that could be an interesting little fight. But, I don't know if I'm going to take something fun. You know, just go out with a theme as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of going to be a grind fest pretty much until the world casters can get to each other or make a hole.
Yeah.
What do you think, Pat?
I was trying to do the same thing, and you know, you're taking this list to do, you know, to try to play something fun. I'm trying to approach this from the same angle, do something that's maybe not, you know, that's sort of atypical with what I would usually do or with what Signar would usually do. So, and I'm still trying to formulate it in my head, but I'm thinking something like you're saying, I want to stay away from the obvious choice warcasters, like, you know, a Striker that could just knock her down with Earthquakes. Or even a Kane who's just going to stand back and shoot her at range. So, you know, something like maybe Siege could be fun. I mean, he's got some strong points. And actually, you know, the one thing in his advantage the one thing that he could help with is, you know, he's got a counter AoE to the Nis. So I could, you know, throw that out there as well. And actually maybe even try to use him to try to take care of that threat. It would kind of be hoping for the deviations on a Explosivo shot.
Sure. That would be an excellent way to do it.
Or, you know, or put, you use, and another thing I was thinking of putting in that list, something that I don't play anymore pretty much at all, would be like Long Gunners and maybe even like the Precursor Knights. Put those two together in that typical, you know, let them defend the Long Gunners from, you know, stand up from them.
Yes. Just like Colonial Firelines.
Yeah, do something like that, because I've never used that tactic that I have at my disposal. If so, you could, you know, try that maybe as a something.
I'm going to say she has her spell Distraction that she would use possibly against the Precursor Knights because it lowers mat and defense, prevents ranged attacks. So actually, against Precursor Knights, she wouldn't even be able to cast it against them because you know, you might be able to have your Precursor Knights up there and be able to do something mm-hmm. since she wouldn't be able to hit them with Distraction.
Well, that's true. I could see, you know, turn two or three into the game, the Precursors probably would, you know, take their opportunity to get a charge off, and they are pretty good. They're good offensively, you know, in a hand-to-hand situation, so that could be good as well. And, of course, like I said, you know, throw the Explosivos from Siege on Long Gunners. You've got the range, and then, you know, hopefully you get some good deviations, take out some or most of the Nis. I got to say, I've got to do it. I've got to put my storm guard in so that we're going halberdier, you know, halberd versus halberd, just because it's a theme.
I can see that.
You know, I would say, I guess it's just my own, you know, my own opinion, but I would say that my storm guard would have the advantage because they've got that leap at the end, you know, if sure. they successfully hit. So I might be, you know, up on that, but you know,
they do have four fin though.
They do.
But I was gonna say, I don't have much.
They're only
I've probably
five,
played against
they?
Them once or so, but I mm-hmm. so I don't know all their dirty little tricks.
But keep in mind, a halberdier can only forfend once per turn, essentially. Right. So if you can fool me into forfending when I really shouldn't, you might be able to really get off your leaps better than I would mm-hmm. expect.
So there's that. Gosh, let's see what else. You know,
what about a storm list? Stormclad, Stormguard.
Yeah, I've put Epic Striker in there.
He's got that razor blade that he can swipe across like the Nis or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, an Epic Striker list is very strong with a, like you said, the storm theme. You put a Stormclad in there and then throw the storm, you know, put the storm blades in with it. That's a deadly little unit. I mean, you could also throw Snipe onto that unit, and you've got storm blades and their accompanying Jack that can throw out, you know, I want to say it's like a 13 inch range. I'm sorry. If you put the standard bear with them, mm-hmm. like a 13 inch range attack on their weapons. And it's some like POW 14, I think on mm-hmm. the, on
yeah,
the
it's hit. Not bad at all.
And Striker.
Old Rowdy.
Oh, I don't know.
Cause it's Striker.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, but anyway, that combination there would be pretty good. And again, they've got a high enough armor that they could probably take some of the hits from, like, you know, that AOE that you'd throw mm-hmm. at them from the Nis. So they could probably, you know, they could actually shoot at them maybe and possibly even hit, maybe.
Well, Concentrated Valley is only a POW 10.
Oh, right. So. POW 10 versus their armor. They've got a chance of surviving that. So especially, I'd probably Arc Shield them because, you know, they're so expensive to begin with. You know, the Stormblades. Why not try to keep them around to get them actually
up
to
something?
For
now, good lord, are we discussing the next version?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and then obviously the hope would be to throw them in against your, like, your Nomad and your Vanguard eventually, because mm-hmm. they're great can openers. So yeah, that would be a good list too. But like I said, I'm trying to think of something that, you know, like you said, play something that you haven't done before.
Are they an electric can opener?
Oh, absolutely.
Are they an electric Boogaloo?
No, maybe.
Not at all.
Shit. You know what might be funny to play against this? Then again, it might not be funny. Either the Argus or Shredder Swarm. Just kind of silliness. It might also get frustrating, though.
I think it could.
How about an Umber Guard list?
What does an Umber Guard list usually have?
Flame Guard. I don't think the Umber Guard list is very strong. I think this list would have a decent chance against it, especially mm-hmm. with your you know, drop a Concentrated Valley. It's not going to take out anything like a Shield Wall TFG unit, mm-hmm. but Cleansers will go down. Daughters will go down hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, anything like that.
Who leads Umber Guard? Fioras, obviously.
Fioras, the Harbinger.
Harbinger.
Oh, I can't remember the last person.
Because they just
else.
Added, they may have added something in that last change, maybe. Resnick?
I can't remember offhand.
Definitely at least the Fioras, and they would scare me the most.
Yeah. I mean, regular Fioras sets Ashland on fire, bad things happen. Either Fioras sets Ashland on fire, bad things happen. Right. And then in that case, the clock is on. You better hurry.
No kidding. Well, that's another thing you bring up, though. I think the game would need to be fast if the Ashland player wants to win, I think, because there's no lag, there's no attrition here, not much at all.
Mm-mm.
And so, I think either way, the game would probably run fairly fast, which I think is sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes that's another good sign of a good, fun thing to play against, something that just isn't a grind.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, forever. Okay, now what do I do? There's 5 miles on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go, your turn.
Yeah. That chess game can be fun sometimes, but more often than not, I'd rather play more games, more sure. fast games. Once in a while, you'll get that long, drawn-out, epic battle that just is fun for some other esoteric reason, but I think quick games are good.
What about Circle?
So this list actually has quite a bit of Pathfinder and or ways to sort of mitigate rough terrain. Alton Ashley is Pathfinder. Gudrun, I believe, has Pathfinder. Is that correct?
Yes.
Rupert can give Pathfinder. Stannis Brocker has the Furious Charge order he can give to the cavalry. And the Nis Hunters have Pathfinder. So normally you can block line of sight with your forest and whatnot, but any kind of rough terrain using that to prohibit the army from moving might not necessarily work. I hate to say it, the Kruger spam, lightning spam to work, but that's not fun to play against. So that's not a valid,
not really.
Not a valid army right here.
How about Morvana popping infantry?
I was thinking about Morvana. You know, I'm just not that good with her. And so I know she sucks to play against sometimes, but I don't know if that's because I sucked against her or because she just sucks in general to play against.
Wow. Well, I suck at you.
It is. She could be fun, though. You know, this is an infantry swarm, I'm not going to lie. So playing against another infantry swarm might not be a bad bad way to play it. Chromac could be fun. He's a B-stick, and so having him tear through your army while you're tearing through his, I think that might be a fun way to go.
Or even have him throwing, like, bestiality on...
He might be in human form during that game.
Yeah.
Since there's lots of stuff to scare away. By the way, he's probably going to lose that minus 2 command in Mark 2.
Probably.
Yeah, I had to think about, you know, renaming it something other than bestiality, too. But hey, that's just my thought.
I think it's actually bestial.
It is bestial.
Yeah.
Okay.
But everybody's
and it's brutality and bestiality.
That's okay, there you go. Oh, come on, you're the faction.
You got your brutality in my bestial. Sorry.
You're the faction that has furries, okay?
This is true.
So I don't know. It's just kind of a goofy list, but I think it'd be fun to play against. If I had that cavalry, I might actually try it out, but I don't own those cavalry.
What would you do with this list?
I don't own a Vanguard or Nomad either.
What about something that, well, if you start dealing with high army?
High armor?
What if you have to start dealing with high armor?
That's the thing. Well, just in general, armor jacks, if you're lucky enough to get a rust bomb on it, that wouldn't be too big of a deal. But if you got, like, say, demo core or shock troopers or something, you know, in tight formation, shield wall, armor 21, how do I get around that? I don't really. I might be able to get a good crack in, but not enough to actually take the model out. And so that's going to be speed bump against speed bump. And at that point, like you were saying earlier, the clock might be ticking for me to actually get the job done.
Yeah, because I was actually thinking, you know, maybe like a Darius list, a typical, you know, like heavy jacks. That's going to be obviously a high armor list. But I would think that even with that, you would still have the maneuverability to, you know, say get around and get a Darius. I mean, you're going to have to beat on him for a while, but I still think, you know, you've got some things that you could do. Certainly a, you know, like you said, the rust bombs and everything would definitely take out anything that would hurt the Jaxi's string.
And there's nothing there that'll get rid of a wreck marker, so you could still bring it back.
Yeah.
If I were playing that, I would do everything in my power to make sure that it was Anastasia who did the killing blow on Darius, because I think that would be funny.
Well, yeah, that's typically... Actually, that might be a fun one to play, because one thing that you always hate to see when you're running Darius is an infantry swarm. Mm-hmm. So that could be a good one to play just to get some, you know, get some practice against it.
See, Darius does have the AoEs in his power, though.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, he's got the half jacks and you know,
and the half-jacks.
Meltdowns could be nasty, but yeah, it's a possibility.
It's interesting. No, I kind of want to play this list. I just don't own the jacks and the cavalry,
so Proxy. I probably won't.
You own Anastasia?
I own two Anastasias.
Really?
By accident.
All right, then.
He just really likes that model.
And I own three Gormans.
Wow.
You paint them all different colors?
No. I could do a Huey, Dewey, and Louie thing, though, I suppose. They look kind of like ducks with the gas mask.
I was just about to say you could do a
I've seen a Darkwing duck.
Yeah, I think. Was it Lego Gun? I think it's Lego Gun that has that. That's all I've got.
All right.
Me too.
You guys good to go, then?
I am. I think Pat's really good to go. He's all liquored up.
Rock on.
Woodchuck on.
I got my woodchuck on.
I still don't want to know what's actually in that liquid.
Rock out with your woodchuck out.
I could read the ingredients to close off the episode. Boy, that'd be exciting.
Can you overlay the ending credits with him reading the ingredients?
I probably.
Whether you'll do that or not, we'll see. But hit it off, Pat. Folks, we'll see you later.
Bye.
It's funny, I thought these were the ingredients. It's not, it's a government warning.
You really are drunk.
That's awesome.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.
I haven't been dry this whole episode.
Yep, Pat has been boozing it up.
I'm living in a wet county, baby. Good to be with you guys.
To Bill Brasky.
I can't wait to
impregnate his wife and she gave birth to a 9-ounce steak.